All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. And our first guest today on the show is Eric Margolies. He writes a regular essay at lourockwell.com, one of which we're linking to today at antiwar.com. Eruption on the Nile, confusion on the Potomac. His website is ericmargolies.com. He authored the books War at the Top of the World and American Raj, and is a regular guest expert on the Middle East and Central Asia, the Islamic world in general, on this show. Welcome back, Eric. How are you?
I'm back and ready to go with Egypt.
All right, good deal. Well, you know what? I want to start, as you do in your most recent article here, with Washington, D.C. Do these people have any idea what they're doing in regards to the attempted, at least, revolution going on in Egypt right now?
Scott, I don't think they have any idea in Washington. What an embarrassing and shameful display the U.S. government is doing. You know, they want to hang Julian Assange for exposing the inner workings of U.S. foreign policy. Well, they don't need to worry about that because they've done such a wretched job themselves that Washington is an embarrassment for the world. Not only Washington, also Paris, too. But look, we have no policy. We don't know what to do. We have people talking across purposes, and Obama muttering platitudes about democracy and liberty, and Hillary Clinton talking about, you know, we can't allow, you know, we've got to support Mubarak, the Muslim Brotherhood, and this and that. So cross purposes, Joe Biden confused. And then we've got the big power pressure groups in Washington who are really causing this fumbling policy: Friends of Israel, the military-industrial complex, the farm lobby, the finance lobby. They're all pushing their own agendas on the government, and the result is confusion, chaos, and embarrassment.
We'd be better off if we just made Obama outright the emperor. At least he wouldn't have to satisfy all these democratic interests demand empire there.
His intentions may be good, President Obama, but he can't execute because he doesn't have hold the levers of power in his hand. And, I mean, you have, look, the twin embarrassments, Scott. First of all, he tells Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, no more settlements illegal settlements on Arab land. And Netanyahu gives him the finger and just tells him to get lost. And the same thing to Biden. Humiliating the American president. And to make matters worse, the U.S. Congress backs Netanyahu. Number two, Obama says to Mubarak, go, comma, now. And Mubarak gives him the Egyptian version, the old Sphinx finger, and he's staying there. And what we see is that the whole Egyptian security apparatus, led by Washington's real man in Cairo, General Suleiman, is staying there, and it's getting American help, probably American money, and is still in power. So you can really see that the American president has been humiliated.
Well, and you know, on all these things, on the settlements, on Egypt, and never mind his motives, because I don't assume they're good at all. I assume they're the motives of a president, and I don't like them very much. But if, for example, he meant what he said on any of these things, he could follow through. He could put pressure on the Congress to say, no, you're going to be quiet about Israel this week because this is the policy and whatever. He could put them in line. Same thing with closing Guantanamo or whatever. And if he doesn't control Hillary Clinton, then he ought to get rid of her.
Well, I couldn't agree more, Scott, but I don't think that the president is ready, has the cojones to stand up to Congress and or to Hillary Clinton or to these other powers.
Right, he's got enough to want to be the president, but that's all.
That's right, and he doesn't want to anger anybody, and these people will be after his throats if he's not careful. He's got an election coming up. He's wounded already. But we see a horrible situation where the U.S. has now got the worst of both worlds. It has been revealed, the only people who don't really understand this are Americans, it's been revealed for having supported the most brutal dictatorship in Egypt and other countries of the Arab world for 40 years or more. They've been a patron of torture and repression. And now it's revealed as a blundering fool that it can't decide what to do in the Middle East, and everybody thinks that the U.S. is still supporting dictatorship on the sly, which I suspect it may be.
Yeah, I mean, the New York Times is reporting, as you mentioned, that they're right now apparently placing all their bets on this guy, General Suleiman. He's going to be the new dictator of Egypt if D.C. has their way, yeah?
Oh, Scott, I wrote last April, I wrote an column, which is in LouRockwell.com, saying already last April now, saying that the explosion was coming shortly in Egypt, and that Washington had already picked out General Suleiman, the intelligence security chief, as Mubarak's successor. So in this sense, plans are moving along as Washington had predicted, because Suleiman is really the man with the power now. And it's very interesting, Egyptian government workers, whose number is 500,000 bureaucrats, were just given a 15% pay raise.
Mm-hmm.
And where do you think the money's coming from that? Well, it's either coming from Saudi Arabia or from Uncle Sam.
Right. Well, and here's the thing, too. I hate to be so pessimistic about this, because I saw Tahrir Square yesterday, hundreds of thousands of people out there entering the third week of the protests in Egypt. And, you know, the dissent here, these people are serious and you know, peaceful in their tactics. And it's just the most beautiful thing to see, this attempted revolution here. But the thing is, it can only be attempted for so long, Eric, before it's a failure. And so I wonder whether you think that at the end of the day, this guy Suleiman, is he just going to try to wait them out? Or is he going to sick the army on them to put this revolution down? Or is it possible that they could win? That, you know, enough infantrymen would side with the protesters that not only Mubarak, but his government would have to leave town?
Scott, that's the riddle of the Sphinx right now. That the revolution will probably run out of steam, and under economic pressure and police pressure, and Suleiman is hoping to hang on to power, and his American and Israeli patrons, because remember, Suleiman is Israel's man in Cairo, just as Mubarak was. They're holding on, and hoping, that things will stabilize, our favorite word. However, I think there's also a very good chance that that the Egyptian army will eventually act, particularly if chaos continues. The question is it going to be a coterie of senior generals who will back the existing order, or will be a group of younger generals, of Nasserite generals, who do what Gamal Abdel Nasser did back in 1952 and kick out the old generals and take over as a nationalist party that's dedicated to Egypt's welfare rather than one that takes orders from Washington.
You know what I wonder? How come the Israelis can't hire some PR people? It seems like, you know, when it comes to influencing what Americans think about Israel, it's all PR all the time. Like, they must spend billions of American tax dollars on convincing Americans to send them billions of tax dollars over there. And yet, when it comes to revolution in Egypt, they outright say, we're going to have to build up our military. Oh, my God, what if we lose our puppet torturer guy that has been so loyal to us? All hell could break loose. I mean, guilty conscience much, guys? It seems like the PR experts would be telling Netanyahu to play it cool and not sit there with their hair on fire. Oh, my God, if the people of Egypt have their way, they might no longer do whatever we say, like help us imprison the people of Gaza.
Well, that's very true. Of course, Israel's got Fox News, they've got the New York Times, they've got the Wall Street Journal to do their PR work for them. But but most Americans,
I read Haaretz, and I'm embarrassed for them. I'm like, guys, come on! You can't just outright be on the side of evil here, you know?
Well, a lot of Israelis have been very outspoken in supporting the revolution in Egypt. I find this extremely heartening and admirable. I applaud the Israelis who had the courage and the chutzpah to come out and say, you know, we're with the Egyptians. There is a peace movement in Israel. We keep forgetting it. But look, in the States, Americans have been so Pavlovian. Islamic terrorism, the Iranians are at the gates, sword-waving mullahs. The Egyptians are going to take over Egypt. The Muslim Brotherhood is coming to attack Akron, Ohio, and so forth. And that's all Americans are hearing.
Right, yeah. All right, well, hold it right there. I got a bunch more, and I know you do. It's Eric Margolies, LouRockwell.com, EricMargolies.com. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton, and I'm on the line with Eric Margolies. Spell it like Margolis for the website, EricMargolies.com. Also at LouRockwell.com. With a new one that's linked from antiwar.com today. Eruption on the Nile, confusion on the Potomac. And We're talking about the empire's failure in Egypt here. And I'm not sure which direction to go with this. I guess I want to get back to the possibility of this thing. You know, I talked with that former CIA guy, Bob Baer, the other day. And he was saying, well, emphasizing the extent to which the state is the society in that country. And I guess that means that they could be so top-heavy that they completely obliterate themselves in a Soviet Union-type fashion. But then again, it also means that, short of that, they're very entrenched. And if the entire government is the military, and most of the economy is the military, then really, you know, it doesn't matter how many of the top guys you get rid of in a row. If you get rid of Musharraf and all of his cabinet, it's still the exact same dictatorship left over in the end. And so this thing really isn't going to go anywhere, at least for a while. I mean, the precedent's been set that it must happen. But then again, the army of Egypt didn't go anywhere, not this time.
Well, that's you're quite right. The top generals of the army, all the business oligarchs, the media, the courts, the police, the security apparatus, etc., are all part of this huge government dead weight sitting on the country. It will, to get rid of it, will require a violent revolution, I suspect, or a much broader revolution, and that will really demand the army and parts of the army. Now, Egyptians have been humiliated for decades by their subservience and servility to both the U.S. and Israel. They don't like it. There's a lot of anger that's built up there in a very passive, placid people, but it's just been building. So the danger is this, Scott, that if we repress the legitimate demands for democracy and open government now in Egypt, and I say we because we're working hand in glove with the Cairo regime, if we repress it, we will then be guaranteed to fulfill our warnings about radical, dangerous wild men in Egypt, because we will force the opposition underground, and it will then mutate from a democratic, open group into a very violent, extreme, not only Islamic, but also perhaps communist, Marxist, you name it, revolutionary. So we will be creating our own revolution in Egypt, not the one that we want.
Right. I mean, you look at the tactics of the protesters now, just trying to show with peaceful sheer numbers on the streets, and they have defended themselves from attacks by the secret police at times or whatever, but pretty much this is a Gandhi, Martin Luther King kind of moment over there. They've got the moral high ground for sure now, but you're right. I mean, I guess if the way it looks is that Uncle Sam is going to win here. He is going to get to keep his torture dictatorship. And that's exactly what's going to happen, is we're going to turn Egypt into a civil war.
Well, that's what I fear. And, you know, Washington is taking pretty much its marching orders on this issue from Egypt, because much of what's going on in Egypt is seen in Washington through the lens of Israel, its commentators, its strategists, its friends in the United States. And but you know, this isn't good for Israel either. Israel will not want to live next to a revolutionary, violent Egypt. The old order of Mubarak cannot go on forever. You know, if Israel would only make peace with the Palestinians, that would do much to alleviate this whole situation, but it doesn't want to. Washington doesn't understand it, but it doesn't want to do anything about it.
Yeah. Well, and so we just continue on. Here's the thing, though, that I wonder about, and maybe you could, like, compare and contrast a little bit with the revolution in Iran in 79. And maybe there's nothing to contrast, but it sort of seems like maybe the narrative is getting through. It's sort of unavoidable, isn't it, that America backs this dictatorship that are the bad guys in this story? As Glenn Greenwald was pointing out, there always has to be a good guy, bad guy narrative on TV, and clearly these protesters are the good guys, and so what does that make us? You know, I mean, can that lesson finally sink through? And why wasn't that part of the narrative, or was it at all part of the narrative in 79 that, like, hey, this guy, you know, Pahlavi was really hard on these people, and he was our guy?
Well, he was our SOB. We've been going down that road now for as long as I can remember.
I mean, the way I learned about the Iranian Revolution was them crazy Islams rose up and did their Islam thing and took hostages and the terrible things that Islamic people do or what, you know, it wasn't ever described as blowback from the previous dictatorship, you
well,
know.
We're doing the same thing we did after 9/11. After the 9/11 attack, the people who hijacked the planes and drove them into the buildings made very clear they were doing that to punish the United States over Palestine, over its support or repression of the Palestinian people. Yet that act was quickly transformed into a diabolical act of Islamic fanaticism. They weren't doing it for Allah. They were doing it because they were mad at the United States. Now we're seeing the same phenomena. Legitimate revolution in Egypt is now being described across the United States by the poly agitprop media as Islamic fundamentalism, Muslim Brotherhood. Those scimitar people are after us again. We won't admit that we have played a shameful role for 40 years in Egypt. We put these people in power and kept them there. We trained their secret police. We did the same thing in Latin America. But there's never any sense of shame in the United States. Maybe on the left in the United States, and liberals in my native New York are concerned about this. But for the rest of the United States public, the United States is always blameless and Simon pure in these things, and so we've never learned the lesson that what we've done is coming back to haunt us.
Well, I sure hope Ron Paul runs for president again, because I think, you know, when he first tried to make this point about, look, we were bombing Iraq from Saudi Arabia for 10 years leading up to the 9/11 attack, then we invaded Iraq, which had nothing to do with it, whatever. People in D.C. and the TV media, you know, New York, D.C. corridor or whatever up there, this is all very shocking to them. Read Robert Pape, they don't. And so this was, you know, it was, they kind of characterize him as a clown for that or whatever. But I think now they at least understand the point and that it's not an insane point to make. That, no, really, we were intervening over there before the terrorism started here. And it seems like maybe this could be a real good way to illustrate the point again, especially if he runs. This is the nature of the war on terrorism is always a big part of what he has to say. And of course, it's always with the bludgeon that they want to hit him with. If he says, hey, we need to disengage from the world, they say, well, what about terrorism? This is really gets to the heart of the matter, right? The 30-year dictatorship of Hosni Mubarak, they're the secret police that tortured Ayman al-Zawahiri into becoming the head of Egyptian Islamic Jihad and eventually best friends with Osama bin Laden.
Well, Scott, what I say in my book, American Raj, which is all about this very subject, about how we have supported all these dictatorships across the Muslim world, and how what we call terrorism is really blowback for our actions in the Muslim world. And the major thing is the fight against the people in the Muslim world against their own despotic governments, where the U.S. is simply a secondary target, sort of kind of collateral damage. I was very honored to learn that Ron Paul was put my book, American Raj, as one of his three books on his current reading list. So I'm glad somebody is listening. I pray that he runs for president. He's the only politician I know in Washington who has the guts to speak the truth.
Well, and you know, that's the thing about the presidential run, is that's what people, regular folks, don't pay attention to politics except when it's a presidential election. That's when these kinds of topics are really discussed, not just among people who are especially interested in this kind of thing, but among everybody. And that really, to me, is the central lesson of the whole thing. If we could at least understand that we picked the fight, then maybe we could have a real argument about what to do now, you know?
Well, I wonder, because this thing in Egypt has produced another wave of anti-Muslim hysteria across the United States. And you see idiots like Glenn Beck claiming that this is part of a communist, Islamic, red Chinese conspiracy, and the Sarah Palins of the world, and the Newt Gingriches, who are feeding off this and broadcasting prejudice and vile anti-Islamism. I call it the anti-Semitism of our era. And that is what's going to affect Americans more than clear thinking.
Yeah, I'm afraid that's true. And the parallels between this kind of shtick and the anti-Jewish conspiracy theories of Europe 60 years ago are just eerie to me. You know, I believe in demagoguery, but I only demagogue up. Guess what, y'all? It's the people with the power that are the ones doing this to us, not the weak and far away, for crying out loud. You know, but anyway. All right, thanks very much, Eric. I always learn a lot.
Great to be with you, Scott. Cheers.